Nick Gismondi was on the AT&T pre and post and in between periods, and he joined Steve and Adam here in Vegas. What's up, Nick?
Hey, Steve, Adam, how you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. So before we deep dive on what's going on with the Golden Knights, talk about the end of the game and the shootout and just how ridiculous it was on both sides.
Well, you know, this team continues to surprise me every time I watch them, and I think the overriding factor is there's just no quitting these guys. I think the bigger odds you stack against them, the more tough the situation is, the more these guys thrive. And you can see the patience, you can see the confidence on the bench, on the guys. There's no panic in their eyes at any point. And I think last night was a perfect example of that. Down a goal, no problem. They get it back to tied. Heading to overtime, no problem. Cool and calm. Go on a power play, or the other team goes on a power play. Ducks get a power play late in overtime. No big deal. We'll kill that off. This team just doesn't have any quit in them. It was incredibly exciting. And I give the Ducks a lot of credit. They're a team right now that is very injured and struggling a little bit. Of course, Gibson is a huge bright light for them right now in net. But it's a great game. That's a big character win for the Golden Knights yesterday.
How much of that attitude do you credit to Gerard Gallant, who, when you talk to the players, just the sense that you get is that he just lets them kind of be them and lets them, you know, handle their business themselves and doesn't get too high or too low and just says, hey, go out there and do the job?
He's a player's coach. That's one of the big things about that guy. And you'll hear that from any guy that's really played for him. Guys love playing for Coach Gallant because of that mentality. He's not going to stress him out. He's going to be the voice of reason when he needs to be, but that room's accountable. They hold each other accountable. And I think the beauty of it is you've got a bunch of guys in that room that are leaders that, you know, have that chip on their shoulder. And I feel like everybody keeps saying that, and I keep saying it as well on TV, but it's the truth. You've got guys in there that are out to prove something. Some guys are out to prove something to their old teams. Some guys are out to earn contracts in the next year. But they're all in that for one another, and I think that's kind of what is driving things. And Coach Gallant has been the cheerleader for them in that regard, and he's sort of letting them dictate a little bit of policy, and it's working.
So I guess here we are. It's essentially a third of the way through the season. Is it far enough into the season to start saying, like, you know, this team is going to be this, or this team is, you know, a certain attitude or a certain, you know, a certain identity about the team? Is it, have we figured that out yet, or is it still kind of early in the season to start doing that?
Yeah, I think the identity's there. I think it might be a little early to say this is where they're going to end up and things like that. I mean, listen, coaches and players, whether they'll admit it or not, are counting points at this point. I mean, you don't necessarily make the playoffs in November, December, this early part of the season, but you certainly can miss the playoffs. And they know that. You know, I talked to Coach Gallant yesterday, and, you know, he said he's not even looking at the numbers. And I don't know if I fully believe that. I think he's probably looking at the numbers. But if he's looking at the numbers, he's a happy guy, because this team has all the indications that they're going to be a playoff team. You know, they've got some tough trips ahead of them. The road will be unfavorable a little bit. You know, in February, they've got some long road trips coming up, and that has obviously tested this team in the past. But right now, they're 500 on the road. They've got a winning record at home. They're scoring a ton of goals for and not giving up that many against. So all indications say they're a playoff team. And in terms of identity, yeah, I think you know the identity. I don't think that's going to change. I think that this locker room is going to stay pretty much intact. And I think that the identity is, hey, we're going to work hard. We're going to transition really good. And no matter what you throw at us, we are going to bounce back in the game. And if not that game, we're going to bounce back a game or maybe two later.
You've been very successful against the division. Is that, you think, focus on those games, or is that just the division not being very good?
Well, that's a good division. I think that there's some good teams in that division. There's some teams in that division that are going to get better, too, which is scary. Anaheim is going to get better. You got to be careful about them, that's for sure. The Los Angeles Kings are a very good hockey team right now. You know, you look up and down at two. Edmonton was supposed to be really good. They're a little bit of a surprise, and you can never really count out San Jose. Vancouver surprised a little bit, too. So it's an okay division right now, no doubt about it. Some teams are going to get better. Certainly the the big battle in the Pacific is going to be Los Angeles and Vegas for the time being, but I think that these players know what it means to have that division rivalry, and unfortunately or fortunately, they have played pretty much a significant amount of interdivision games at this point. So that's the mentality. They're geared up for it. They're working hard in those games. Those are big points. Those are three-point nights sometimes for these teams.
Nick Ismondi is with us from AT&T Sportsnet. So how does this fall apart?
Well, that's a good question. Brad May and I talked about that last night on the broadcast and then afterwards. I don't know as though it does fall apart. Because I believe in this, I believe in that room, and I see the way these guys are together. I played hockey growing up. I've been around hockey my whole life. You can see different things in different guys, and this is a tight bunch. This is a tight room. There's not any cliques. They get along. They hang out. They enjoy each other's company. They laugh. They joke. It's a tight-knit bond. So normally, if you look at teams in the past, that's sort of where things can get bad. Injuries might hurt this team. Yeah, they've overcome the goaltending situation, but if you lose a couple of key offensive guys, they're going to have trouble scoring goals. That could be an issue. And, you know, we'll see what happens at the trade deadline. George McPhee has got a plan, and I'll be interested to see what he does come the deadline, if he moves pieces to pick up draft picks or if he goes all in to make the playoffs, if they're in a spot for that.
What do you think he'll do?
I think that he is an incredibly, incredibly smart man, and I've said for a long time that he's Herb Brooks, this team, which is ironic because he played for Herb Brooks, but... I think he's built a team here that is the right personalities and the right amount of skill. But the plan has always been playoffs in three, cup in six. However, Mr. Foley is a winner, and I think that this team making the playoffs in the first year is a very good thing. So do you maybe see movement of Perron or Neal, perhaps?
Ooh.
I think that's what George would like to do.
Really? So you believe if people call and offer a nice deal for James Neal, they could move him?
Well, listen, these guys are playoff. Initially, these guys were chips. They're looked at as playoff chips, right? Or trading chips. And what I mean by that is, he wants to build this team young, and he's going to do that by picking up draft picks. That's how you cultivate a Stanley Cup team. So you can get some big numbers for guys like that, no question about it. You can get high draft picks for guys like Neal, guys like Perron, potentially maybe a few others. I mean, I've even heard Marchessault thrown around, but I think Marchessault is a guy that you got to get the deal done on. So I think it's going to depend on where these guys are come the trade deadline, to be quite honest with you. And right now, I think that the plan is a little bit in flux.
What happens when Fleury is back in regular action?
When Fleury's back in regular action, his team gets a boost. He's one of their captains. He's one of the leaders in the room. The boys will play very hard for Fleury. They overcame his absence these last few months because they're playing hard to get him back and put him in a good position. So when Fleury comes back, and I think he'll come back potentially against Carolina, most likely against his old team, the Penguins, next week. But I think when Fleury comes back, this team gets a shot in the arm again, which is dangerous for every other team in the league because this team gets a shot in the arm, they're going to get a little bit of superpower. But I don't think Zuban goes anywhere. I still am shaking my head at how Boston waived him, but Zuban was just unbelievable last night. He has been steadfast. And credit to Danska when he was in for the short term as well, and what I say, and even Dylan Ferguson, who played an integral role in practices and things like that, when he got called up in the emergency situation. So yeah. I think Fleury coming back is a bonus. He skated in full practice today, so he's close.
And that's where I was leading you on Subban. Is it an 80-20 split? It's not 50-50. I mean, Fleury's in there. How often?
Well, I think kind of Gallant goes with who's winning. Fleury definitely likes playing the brunt of the game, so I think it will be, I think initially it'll be an 80-20 just to not overwork Fleury right off the bat, especially because Zuban has proven without question he is super capable of handling it. I mean, he made saves last night that I'll put in the books for save of the year. I mean, he was brilliant. He was brilliant in overtime on the power play, on the penalty kill, excuse me. So he's fantastic. So I think you go 80-20 to start things off, and then maybe it's 70-30 after that, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Breaking down this Golden Knights start with Nick Gismondi from AT&T Sportsnet and NBC Sports. So don't take offense to this, but we're kind of learning who you guys are because we keep seeing new faces on the coverage. And you know, obviously, you're new to covering this team because the team is new. Where are you from? What's your background?
Yeah, so I'm a Detroit boy. I grew up in Michigan. Played hockey there growing up my whole life. Played for a team called CompuWare in Bathurst. And I ended up getting out of hockey at a young age and started in broadcasting when I was just 15 years old. My high school had a radio station. So a bunch of the guys on the hockey team dared me to sort of kind of get into it. And I ended up calling games in the Ontario Hockey League for a long time and then was with Fox Sports in Detroit and then headed out to Los Angeles and lived in L.A. for quite some time, and that's when I sort of got with NBC Sports, and I've enjoyed a lot of time with them covering hockey and covering the Olympics. And then this opportunity sort of presented itself this year, and it was hard to pass up. You know, I know a couple of guys on the team, and hockey's a passion of mine, and I certainly love what this organization has been doing from the very beginning, from the way they built the team to the community stuff that they're involved in. And so it was sort of an easy choice for me to, when the opportunity presented to get involved, I was excited about it.
You mentioned working with Brad May, right?
Yep.
Did you guys show a May Gallant fight last night?
We did. It was fantastic. If you haven't seen it, you got to YouTube it. It's fantastic. So, yeah, so they fought back when Gallant was playing for the Detroit Red Wings, and he was kind of the elder statesman of the tougher guys in the NHL, and Brad May was just a young pup. He was like 19 years old playing for the Buffalo Sabres. And the funny thing about that fight, we told the story on air last night, it was at the end of a big, long, tough shift for Brad May, and everybody else kind of paired up and started fighting. It was one of those good old line brawls that was back in, back in the early 90s in the NHL. And Brad May is exhausted, and Gallant goes up to him and says, well, everybody else has got a partner. You want to fight? Brad May goes, yes, sir, absolutely, but can you give me 30 seconds? So Gallant goes, yeah, take all the time you need. Brad May catches his breath and looks at Gallant and goes, okay, I'm ready now, and boom, they went at it.
That's so ridiculous. And it looked like super cordial at the end, too, when they both ran out of gas. They just started talking to each other.
Oh yeah, well that's what Gallant had said. We interviewed him about it yesterday morning as well before the game, and he said he was proud of him. And Gerard said that he probably bit off a little bit more than he could have chewed.
Yeah,
and that, it was a pretty tough fight. But the other real funny thing about it, boys, I want to get in there is that Brad May on his when guys get drafted, you know, they fill out the questionnaire and things like that. One of the questions on Brad May's questionnaire when he got drafted, just a year earlier was, you know, who do you look up to in the league? Who's one of your favorite guys? Who do you emulate? And, of course, number one on the list was Gallant.
That's nice. Cool, so. And then you're punching him in the face.
Yeah. <lovely. laughs> Yeah, it's about that's hockey for you. And that's how you say hello, and I love you.
what's it like traveling around the Ontario Hockey League?
You know what? It's funny. I look back on that. That was an amazing experience. It wasn't as bad. Shane Knighty and I were laughing about it yesterday. Shane played in the Western Hockey League, which is also under the Canadian Hockey League blanket, and those guys had long buses. Those guys were on a bus for 15 hours, sometimes 20 hours. Oh. In the OHL, it was a little bit more compact, but, man, we would go to cities that nobody's really heard of before. And it's funny, people will tell me, oh, I'm from Canada. I'm like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, Toronto. I'm like, Toronto? And they're like, no, a little town you wouldn't know of. I go, well, try me. And they're like, Owen Sound. I go, oh, yeah, Owen Sound. Georgian Bay, one hotel right across from the rink, small little place. But it's a fan base in the OHL is unbelievable. Like, there's sellout buildings all across Ontario, and I mean it's an amazing experience. And,
yeah, I grew up between Detroit and Buffalo, so I'd made that drive through Ontario all the time. All these little towns.
Oh, you know it. Oh, yeah, you know it. You've been through Sudbury. You've been through Owen Sound, Peterborough.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Nice little drive.
But it forged some amazing friendships for me. The head coach of the Whalers initially was Peter DeBoer and Steve Spott, and they're coaching San Jose now. And then the coach that came in after those guys is Mike Vellucci, and he's the assistant general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes. And a bunch of the guys that played on that team when I was their broadcaster are still my closest friends today. Justin Williams, who, as you guys know, won 3 Stanley Cups, Conn Smythe. He's playing for Carolina right now. Justin's, to this day, one of my best friends. And it was an experience that I wouldn't ever change if I could go back and do it again, because I think it made me who I was as a broadcaster, and certainly in the hockey business. It gave me some of my best friends and family, essentially.
Nick, we appreciate a couple minutes. Let's get you on down the road, okay? Thank you.
Hey, guys. Thanks very much.
There you go. Nick Gismondi, hosting last night and many of the games with Brad May.